Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I'm Zach.
And we are back talking about the legends of Muad'Dib.
The legends of Muad'Dib.
Specifically, though, we're talking about minute 91 through 92 of Dune Part 2.
Yes.
By Denis Villeneuve.
And fair warning, folks. This is a short one.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've already saw from the runtime on your podcatcher of choice, but this is going to be a short one for us.
This is a little bit of dialogue and then scenic shots.
Yeah,
yeah, pretty much. I don't know what else to say other than nighttime scenic shots. So.
Yeah. And I don't really have a lot to say about the books. You don't have a lot to say about Art and Soul, so...
Let's just dive into it.
Let's just say what happens in the movie, I guess.
Yeah. So, yesterday we left off with Paul and Gurney reuniting and, you know, Gurney giving his explanation for where he was in the first part of Dune Part 2 and where he was in the second part of Dune Part 1.
Mm-hmm.
And we left off with, I wanted blood. Raban's head.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then Gurney goes on to recount the legends of Muad'Dib and how even the stories of Muad'Dib have made its way to the spice smugglers. And
yeah,
none of them are pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Gurney's very clearly impressed with Paul, you know, yeah, at this point, you know, I think he's seeing a lot of the training and everything that Gurney and Duncan and Paul's father had all instilled into Paul. And he's seeing Paul become the man that, you know, he is becoming. Granted, Gurney sees this from a outside perspective, without any of the, you know, Missionaria Protectiva stuff, you know, so he's not blinded by faith or prophecy or anything like that.
Right.
There's
a passage in the book that relates to what you're just saying.
Yeah.
It's right after the initial embrace. And this is Gurney speaking. He says, so you're why the Fremen have grown so wise in battle tactics. I might have known. They kept doing things I could have planned myself if I'd only known. So, yeah, what you're saying is exactly right. I mean, he never put the two pieces together that Paul was behind all this. But now that he's hearing it, he's like, oh, and you know,
duh.
Yeah, you know, it would have just made it better if you just like slapped his forehead and went, doy. Yeah.
I think, you know, one of the things that would have made this more impactful is if Denis had kept the actual time jump.
Yes.
That is supposed to be there.
Yeah, I was going to talk about this. Let's save it for a little bit later.
Okay.
Because we will come back to it.
All right. But yeah, even still, over the course of the less than 9 months that it has been, clearly Paul Muad'Dib has been, you know, doing enough damage to the Harkonnen spice production system that outside influences are beginning to notice and collect information and also have a vested interest in what the fuck is actually going on.
Yep. Yep. So
the Spacing Guild.
And he motions over to the smugglers that he brought in with him and he says, you see the fear? And Paul responds with a pretty good line here.
Yeah.
He's like, when they have, I can't remember exactly, I'm sure you have it written down, but it's like, when their resources are limited, fear is all they have.
That's what he says.
Oh, great. I got it right. And that's...
We have nothing to fear but fear itself.
And in this case, rebellions are built on fear instead of hope, as a Star Wars would say. It's pretty much it. From the book perspective, we get all of this in so many ways. The only thing that I think that was left out was a bit of the conversation where Gurney says, "If you know, if only I would have known it was you, I would have left smuggling and come, you know, and come back and all this stuff." And
but he didn't know it was him, so you know
he didn't. Yeah, and Paul kind of just like looks at him and raises an eyebrow, described as a hard weighing stare in the books. And Gurney kind of pieces it together, you know, strategy kind of stuff. He says, sure. And there'd have been those who wondered why Gurney Halleck went a-running, and some would have done more than question. They'd have gone hunting for answers.
I went a-running.
So Paul didn't want him there. As much as he did want to see his friend and have his friend by his side, people would have, it would have raised more questions than Paul wanted to answer at that point. I guess we can talk about the time jump stuff now, actually, and I'm thinking about it.
Yep.
I just realized that the part that I was going to bring it up is not until next week. But yes, the two-year time jump is a lot more impactful in this meeting.
Yeah, it's I feel like, I mean, not to put limitations on the feeling of loss and the sudden recovery of, you know,
sure.
lost friends and family, but it definitely, I think, would have been more impactful had it been years without seeing Paul. But, you know, what are you going to do?
It still works, but there's a lot more. I mean, given a longer period of time, there's a lot more things that can change within a person.
Yeah.
So, and that's a general statement. That's not the hard and fast truth, but it is it makes Gurney seeing all the ways that Paul has grown make a little bit more sense if it's stretched over 2 years versus the less than 9 months or whatever that we've seen.
Well, in that sense too, physically grown, because Paul's what, 15 in the very start of the book. So for him to go from 15 to 18 ish, you know, I don't know about you, but when I had just turned 15, I hadn't hit my like big growth spurt yet.
So still I was on it.
Shut the fuck up. I know I'm short. Shut up. But no, I was like, when I turned 15, I was still 4'11". So like, got my ass shoved into some fucking lockers for sure. No, so like, I was still real short and everything. So like, for me, you know, if you hadn't seen me from the time that I had just turned 15 until the time that I was 18, it was a bit of a difference.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. And this is old news at this point. We've said it before, but it also the time jump also makes how Paul is leading the Fremen make more sense. Because in the movie, it's just a meteoric rise into basically being a demigod.
Yeah.
But if you stretch that out over 2 years, it makes a lot more sense why he has and how he's able to cultivate that cult behind him.
Yep. In fairness to Denis, though, I think the sudden, very sudden meteoric rise to demigod status kind of does play into the whole, you know, Bene Gesserit storyline that he wanted to follow with, and you know, sure, the how impactful Missionaria Productiva actually is in that case. Yeah. So
it's like the difference between throwing a match in a keg of black powder versus a slow burn.
Yeah.
Slow burns are good for books. Flashing explosion are good for movies. So
And whispers,
yes.
Whispers and explosions, baby. All right. We're dragging this on. We cut from this conversation between Paul and Gurney to a canyon. And Gurney and the rest of the smugglers are following the Fedaiken. And I went back to the beginning of Dune Part 2. Mm-hmm. This is not the same canyon that they walked through as they are approaching Siege Tabor. I was like, did they just turn around and then like refilm from a different direction or anything?
That's kind of what I thought they did.
Yeah. As far as I could tell, that wasn't the case here. But I definitely went back and was like,
they knew some fucking nerds like us would be watching.
Yeah. And Gurney is excitedly asking Paul about the number of fighters that he has.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's like, you know, how many men? And Paul's like, 200. 200.
Yeah, loudly.
And like very, very loud. And Chani just turns around and just goes, shh, shut the fuck up. Which I thought was funny.
Yeah, she's librarian Chani at this point.
In fairness, though, they are trying. There is a group of 200 that are trying to lay low, yes. And we don't know if there's anyone that's out there listening. So shut the fuck up.
No, she was 100% in the right.
Yeah, no, I'm fully Team Chani on this one. Yeah, shut the fuck up. Stay low. Otherwise, you're gonna catch some strays. But we leave the minute with a question for mm-hmm. Paul. Do you realize what you're able to achieve with 200 men?
Yeah.
And I guess you'll have to find out tomorrow what Paul feels about that.
Yep, we will. It reminded me of that scene in Andor where it's like the last like two episodes of the first season where they're storming the beaches. I don't know if you ever watched it.
Nope.
Okay. There's a
hold on. Season one I watched when it first came out back in like what, 2021?
Something like that, yeah.
So it's been a few years.
Well, Cassian Andor is given like the pep talk before they leave the ship to go run into Scarif. No, sorry, this is Rogue One. I'm sorry. This is coming from Rogue One.
Yeah.
Pardon. And he says the line, make 10 men feel like 100.
Okay. Yeah, that I remember.
Okay.
And I was going to say, because I feel, from Andor, all I remember was the beautiful, like, subplot with Andy Serkis.
Oh, sure.
In the prison and everything.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. It's wonderful.
Heartbreaking.
Yes.
And then, like, I guess at the end of that first season, like, someone gets kidnapped or whatever, and then it's kind of left on a cliffhanger. I don't remember.
Yeah. I know you're Disney Star Wars out.
Yeah.
I think you would enjoy it.
Okay. Well, I'm watching Silo right now, so let me get through Silo.
Good. Admittedly a better show, Silo.
Yeah. Yes. not to drag this episode longer than we need to, but every time I see Rebecca Ferguson do the Rebecca Ferguson stare in Silo, I'm just like, you're really good at this, are you?
Oh, yeah, she's the best. She's the best, man.
All right, who has the better stare, Rebecca Ferguson or Zendaya? Are you fucking kidding me stare?
Ooh, they're so
I think Rebecca Ferguson's is better because she...
Especially
it's kind of Kubrickish where she like tilts her head down and like... does the like eyes forward thing.
I'm gonna say you're right, but only from Silo, because she doesn't really do it much in Dune, and I haven't seen
she does it in part one.
Sure.
She definitely, and we've seen that stare as well here in part two. So I'm thinking specifically of the scene where she's telling Paul that she has to take the water of life. And, you know, Paul asks if men can do it. And she's like, yeah, they can do it and die. And she just like stares at him.
I think Rebecca Ferguson is the better one of the two.
All right. If you disagree with us, let us know.
Let us know. I'm happy to, John's happy to engage in social media for this. just a nice little similarity between franchises. I wonder who stole from who. Although I can't really say that with Rogue One. That's not really a copying from Dune story.
It kind of pulls from a lot of things.
It does. So, anyways, yes, very good scene. Back to the end of this minute. That's the end of the minute. I say we wrap this one up because we're vamping at this point.
Yep.
And let's get back tomorrow.
Alrighty. As always, you can find the Dune Minute online outside of the show. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us the old-fashioned way. We'll be back tomorrow with Wednesday episode.
See you then.
See you later.